Welcome to the Radio 191 FM podcast.
Right now, I am very privileged to be joined by Tom May from the Men's Zingers. Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Good, how you doing?
I'm good. So you're finally making it back to New Zealand after...
Finally.
Yeah, after... How was that for you guys? Because you guys were literally in Australia just before COVID hit, and then it was like closed, everything done.
Yeah, so we were there right when it was... We had a big conversation as to whether or not we were going to go at all right before it started to happen because of the information that was coming out in the States and some of our friends in Europe and shit like that. And we went to Australia anyway, and then I believe it was a Friday night. We played in Melbourne. It was our last Australian day. And that day, the Australian Prime Minister had come on TV and said, all gatherings above X amount of people, it was like, I don't know, 15 people or something, are canceled starting today at midnight or tomorrow at midnight. So we had played our show. After that, everything was canceled. We obviously canceled going to New Zealand, which was following that, and got some of the last tickets that we could on a flight back to LAX. And the whole thing was just, you know, everybody knows the story from there. It was complete chaos.
Yeah. How was that time period for you as a musician who relies on touring and playing gigs for a lot of your income for that kind of period of COVID? Were you like, oh shit, how is this going to work? Are we going to survive this?
Yeah. I mean, it was wild. Like you mentioned that a bunch of our income comes from probably about 80, I think it's like 78%. We broke it down of our income comes from playing live shows. So when we got home, we were like, fuck, we already weren't making any money in Australia anyway. And then we get home, we're like, all right, what are we going to do? You know, not be able to tour. Everything was very, very uncertain. Our first priorities weren't necessarily like, how do I carry on? It was more so like, what's up with the future of civilization or with the health of our family and shit like that.
True.
But yeah, we, you know, held on to the idea that we didn't know what was going to happen. So it was a 50-50 chance anyway, or just like realizing, okay, this has happened many times throughout history. See how it's going to go. But yeah, we did try to scramble and try to come up with alternative ways to bring in money while that was going on. So yeah, we immediately started to re-record new versions of the record that we had put out previously, you know, a couple months before that, and made an alternative version of it. And Epitaph, our record label, were really good to us and, you know, gave us an advance for it. And we put that out and we were able to get some income from that. So
cool. That's cool. Yeah. Cause I know a lot of my musician friends, especially here in New Zealand, where it's a lot smaller scene, they were very, will I have to, you know, how am I going to get through? Fortunately, the government did give out a stipend and a help for musicians and artists and stuff.
Oh, that's
like
great.
So yeah, they were cool with that. Mm. Well, the new album is called Some of It Was True. What inspired that title? Is it referring to much... I hate to kick the elephant in the room. The large orange Cheeto-fingered man who's currently running for your presidency. Truth seems to be an issue for him.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with that. I can vividly remember how we had come up with it. We were sitting in the control room of the studio that we recorded the record at. It's called Sonic Ranch. It's like 30 miles or 40 miles east of El Paso, down in Texas on the border. Okay. We were in this room and we were kicking around album ideas, going over ideas, and just like kind of spitballing into whatever. I don't know. Been around and just trying to like come up with any fucking thing. And we were talking about the warning, or not, it's not a warning, but the disclaimer that comes up before a certain TV show. South Park has the one that's there every episode. You know, it's inspired by real life people, but it's, you know, that all that they, it's like a caveat. And we were looking up what that is called and how that rolls around and, you know, what the idea that we write a lot of songs that are inspired by and tell the story of the things that are going on around us, but it's not, you know, it's not fully autobiographical or even biographical. It's taking influences from stories that we hear and the people that we know in our lives and our own lives and making narratives about it around them to, so you can, we can better explain the world to ourselves. And it came from one of those. So the idea is like, you know, some of it was true, but not all of it.
Very much. Well, what are you looking forward to being coming to New Zealand? Because this will be the first New Zealand time you've made it over here.
This will be the first time that we made it over. We were on our way there in 2020 in March, and we were devastated that we couldn't come. We know several people from New Zealand, Jesus Christ, from New Zealand who are expats living in the United States. Our bass player's wife is from New Zealand. He goes there quite often. The kind of cultural output of the bands and the TV shows and the Lord of the Rings and all that shit is one thing, but also everybody that I've met from New Zealand has been a very charming, wonderful person. The climate, the geography, the people, everything seems like such a beautiful thing. And also online, people have been talking to us about how excited they are for us to come. So that's fucking amazing. And anytime that we get to go to a new place, it's a wonderful thing. And that's kind of the reason that we pushed so hard to be a touring band in the beginning, was we wanted to be musicians and make that our career and do whatever we can to make that happen and just kind of like go along for the ride. But it was a huge opportunity for the four of us who normally wouldn't be able to get to travel the world in other circumstances, get to travel the world and get to see all these places and accumulate all of that shit into a world narrative. But New Zealand looks fucking beautiful. Everyone I've met there has been incredible. And everyone who, I'm sure there's plenty of assholes down there, like there's everywhere, but we're just so excited to go back for that reason. I've got super nerdy. We've been watching YouTube videos about the, you know, different history and socioeconomic background and history of New Zealand and the government structures and the way things work. And I'm fucking stoked, man. And we're taking a bunch of days off after we play the shows.
You're going to hang around a bit. Cool, groovy.
Yeah, we're going to hang around for a while. And also, actually, I skipped over this, but one of the biggest parts about going to New Zealand that has us excited is that all of our friends' bands who have gone there and some of the bands that like we look up to and that have mentored us over the years have nothing but incredible things to say about going there. I'd say it's one of their favorite places they've ever been to. So I really can't wait for that.
And we really appreciate you coming here. We know we are a long way out of nowhere. And for a lot of places, it's kind of like, yeah, we're doing a tour down under and it stops at Australia. It's kind of like, we're not that far away, guys. Hey, we're closer to Sydney than Perth is. You can come over here.
Sure. Yeah,
we appreciate that. And you may not have heard this, but really big for us now. Hot Water Music have confirmed that they're coming over in February. So really looking forward to that as well.
Hell yeah. I was talking to their tour manager about it 2 days ago. They were in we played a festival in Richmond with a Veil. And they were there. And Hot Water Music was one of those bands I was just referring to who had told us that we had to go. We had to go see certain things. And they just have so much goddamn fun every time they go. So we're really excited about that.
Cool. Well, we'll get into some a bit stranger stuff now. What was being in the band? When was the first time you felt like you made it? You were kind of like, oh, my God, we've made it. We can do this. What was the incident that hit you that kind of like, oh, wow, we're really doing this.
Totally. Like, even coming back to the Sum of It Was True idea, it's difficult to pinpoint an exact thing that happened. Just like most things in life, it's kind of like you just like getting older. You're just old. Yeah. Just happens one day. You know, and there's not a specific event. You don't, like, get pulled over by a cop who looks like a baby. You know, that's one of those. But one of the biggest things for us when we realized that we had made it, you know, quote, unquote, was Epitaph, our record label, flew us out to Los Angeles and they paid for all of our flights, and not all of us had been on an airplane before. And when they flew us out there, a guy picked us up holding a sign that had our name on it, and they put us in a hotel, and then we went to this record label and headquarters. Some of those people who were there still work there, and they're just an incredible group of people. And we sat in the back and barbecued and drank some beers and smoked some cigars and listened to some incredibly candid stories about the bands that we grew up listening to. And we realized that when we got flown out there, that was it, you know? And if I had to pick some other ones, it would just be the time in the beginning when we first went to Philly about 16 years ago. There's a famous venue here called the First Unitarian Church, and we put on our first headline show there, and it sold out, you know, not super quick, but it was before the show had happened. And that was another moment of like, holy shit, hundreds of people want to come see our band, let's go. And that was those are the two that stick out to me the most at this moment. Yeah,
cool, cool. Because we're about the same age. Because you would have, like me, you would have grown up on a lot of those Epitaph and Fat Wreck comps that came out.
Yeah, I think the first like compilation I got was the Punk-O-Rama 5 or 4, whichever one had the kid on the front with his face all beat up. That was like one of the first.
Oh yeah,
that was the first compilation.
That was a really good one. That was a really good one. I remember that. A lot of NoFX.
Oh, it was great. Had fucking Tom Waits on it. It was cool.
Yeah, it was so many great
songs on there.
They're a really great record company. So on that, can you remember the first CD you brought when CDs suddenly became a thing? And suddenly,
yeah, totally. So I actually have a really interesting and unique experience with CDs because my dad worked for a CD manufacturer. So there was a big factory in our area that produced, CDs and vinyl records before that and during that. And he worked there, and they would give them like an allotment of CDs, and they had a catalog that you could flip open, and you could get CDs for really cheap on it. And he brought home a series of records. I can't remember the exact first one that I had gotten, but there was like, I was born in 86. My parents were kind of young and they liked, Genesis and shit like that. So there was tapes and stuff around. That was like, they were around the house, but they weren't big music fans, but they were around. And some of the first CDs, one of the first CDs that I bought though, I think, was the Men in Black soundtrack. Which didn't have the fucking Will Smith rap song on it.
Yeah.
So you got home, you're like, God damn it.
Yeah.
And then after that, I remember the first like punk CD I got a job as a dishwasher when I was 14. And one of the waitresses was a punk and she gave me a cassette burned copy of Plastic Surgery Disasters by the Dick Kennedys. And that was one of my first punk. But besides that, it was like, Green Day was on the radio. We'd tape it off the radio and, I'm gonna say that one of the first CDs that I really sessioned that really brought us into the punk world and me thinking that I wanted to be a musician in this way was one of our friend's older brothers. We begged him to go on Napster or whatever Kazaa at the time and download Outcome the Wolves by Rancid. And he gave us a copy of Outcome the Wolves on CD, but it wasn't in order, so it was all songs but they were mixed up. And then when I first heard Outcome the Wolves, when somebody had a proper CD of it, I was like, "This isn't the CD. This is out of order." But yeah, those were the big ones. I remember the first CD that I stole was Milo Goes to College, because I saw that drawing on one of the guys' jackets at a show that we went to at a cafe, and I was like, "I saw that character drawn somewhere, and that's the CD from it. I need to listen to that CD." So Milo Goes to College, which was already out for like 15 years by then.
Would you have ever thought that, after getting that CD, that you would work with Bill Stevenson, the drummer on that album?
No, I didn't. We never recorded with Bill, but we played shows with the Descendants. We've done a couple tours of the Descendants now, and there's been some real fucking insane magical moments. One night, Milo and Bill knocked on our bus's door when we did a tour with them a year or two ago with Rise Against. And they were drinking, and it was like Bill was like, hey, or one of their members was like, hey, we haven't seen Milo's done this like 3 times in the last 20 years. He doesn't do this. And Milo knocked on the bus door. They were drinking whiskey out of like coffee cups, and we came out and we hung out and got to talk to them. And the guy was ready to go to bed, and came out and hung out. And Milo, he's a biochemist, and I think he is maybe a double degree or whatever, but I'm really into mycology, and I got to sit there and talk to one of my heroes about one of my niche hobbies and just music in the world, and it's completely fucking mind-blowing.
Oh, just
so
like,
goddamn cool.
Bam, it's just awesome. Right, can you remember the first concert that not you went to that you actually had to plan to go to? That's kind of like you had to take flights and stuff like that. You had to or drive for a long look, that wasn't a local concert that you could easily go to, then go home and go to bed. A concert where you had to book a hotel or a motel or something like that.
Yeah, so we lived about, where I grew up was like an hour and a half from New York City and 2 hours from Philly. So we one time told our parents we were going one place and then got in our friend's van who was a little bit older, and he he had some medical issues. He had muscular dystrophy. He needed to have a handicapped van. So we would pile 10, 15 of us in this van all the time, every weekend, just blast around. I had big flames painted on the side of it. So we said we were going one place. And I think I was 15 or maybe 16. And we drove down to Philly and went to the Trocadero and saw the Bouncing Souls and Anti-Flag play a show together. And that was... that was probably the first one that I went to that was not within, like, you know, a bus ride home. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's groovy.
There might have been one before that, but that's the one that was, like, that was it. That was a shit.
Because if you've seen the map of New Zealand, I'm in Dunedin, which is Lower South Island. So I got...
Oh, no shit. We're not heading down to South Island. Our front house engineer, he's going down there with his girlfriend to go on vacation after the tours, but we're not going to make it down, unfortunately. That's awesome. You live down there. Cool.
Yeah, no. It's a two-hour travel for me. I remember, who did I describe it to? Frank Turner's old drummer once asked me how far I traveled, and I worked it out, and it is roughly from the distance from London to Rome is the same as Dunedin to Auckland. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm pretty used to doing it nowadays. I normally get the slip on and wander up. So yeah, it's sure. Very minimal compared to what you guys have to travel, you know. It's relatively
easy. U.S. is pretty fucking big too, you know. We're used to going really far distances.
Yeah. So what are you hoping the future will hold for the Menzingers, and, you know, where do you see yourselves going forward? Gosh, that sounds like a stupid job interview question, doesn't it?
Yeah, I should have some kind of like snarky, but not snarky answer, you know, to make me to sell myself like that. What's your biggest weakness? Oh, I tried too hard, that kind of shit. So that's a really good question. I mean, we're older now. We've an established band, and what I hope holds, if we never get any bigger than we are now, I would be completely happy with that. We are able to, you know, sustain ourselves, and we are able to sustain everybody who works for us, and we all live in South Philly within a mile of each other. We have a great life here, and I really hope that we can just sustain what we're doing and continue to make music that's interesting and inspiring to us, and as well as you know, our fans and people who like us. So I really just hope we keep getting to do this. And that's what I would hope for the future. Also, selfishly, I hope that we get to incorporate a little bit more kind of weirder elements into our music. You know, as we're getting older, we're not going to write the same records over and over again. They're not going to be deviating too far, or be pretentious or something like that. But I just really hope that the four of us can still maintain the lifestyle that we have and continue to be creatively fulfilled like this.
Yeah.
So that's what I want for the future.
Yeah, it's weird when you hear punk bands that are in their 40s singing about teenage love and heartbreak. It's kind of like, really?
Yeah.
You're still going with that tune?
Yeah, no, it's thankfully we don't. So we write all the songs together, and no one brings anything to the table that gives you pause and says, "Hey, this is disingenuous. It sounds like we wrote it when we were 20." We thankfully, and also we're so close that we'll be able to call each other out so quickly and something like that. But yeah, it's I really just am still somehow, after all these years, still inspired and fascinated by hearing new music, and not just music that's coming out now, but music that has come out that I've not heard. And the streaming services and that kind of shit makes it so much easier to be able to discover that kind of music, and it's continually inspired. I'm never bored. I'll tell you that. I like having a life where in a creative sense, it's never boring.
Cool. Well, thank you for your time. The Menzingers are playing Tuesday the 20th at the San Fran in Wellington, and Auckland on the 21st of August. Limited tickets are available at Double Whammy. Tom, thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated, my friend.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Hope you have a great great weekend.
That was my interview with Tom May from the Menzingers. Really looking forward to catching up with them up there in Auckland. So those dates again, Tuesday the 20th of August, they are at the San Fran in Wellington with Molgoth. And on Wednesday, the 21st of August, they are down at Double Whammy with Edible Tickets are still available. Go check them out. It's going to be a good time. But right now, I'm going to play you a couple of my favorite Menzingers tracks. That would be America, You're Freaking Me Out, Lookers, and something I've been thrashing a lot lately. It's a really great song. It is Hope is a Dangerous Little Thing. Right, coming up, we got stuff from The Meffs, Wednesdays at 7, Beauty School, Coughing Vicars, New Junk City, Better Lovers, Here for a Reason, The Dune Rats, and The Bennies. But right now, this is The Menzingers in America. You're Freaking Me Out.
FM podcast. All of our content lives online at r1.co.nz.